So I'm going to go ahead and start the recorder then. And I'm just saying on the recording, this is officially not on the record right now, but just for my notes and purposes. So let me grab my, I have a list of questions I was going to ask you. But basically, one of the big things we really kind of want to explore is this idea of COVID impacting DV and abuse and kind of like how like what the impacts were of the coronavirus and still are of the coronavirus. That's kind of like one of the big questions we're hoping to kind of scratch at a little bit. And I don't know if
Right.
there any data is being collected on that or what, you know.
Yeah, that's a great question, whether there is data being collected. I'm sure there is somewhere. But I don't, I mean, so the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is the kind of state regulating agency, and they both regulate and fund to some degree. The community-based domestic violence and sexual assault programs around the state. And they collect statistics as part of that. So they would absolutely have statistics on, shelter nights, contacts that community-based domestic violence sexual assault programs have had over the last year, whether there's been increases, decreases. Similarly, like the court system would have, data on the number of protective orders that have been applied for. I've seen a little of that data over the years, over the last year and a half. Not necessarily remarkable one way or another that I can remember. But again, it's kind of one picture too, because those are the folks who are reaching out for help. And I think the concern more with COVID is that people were not reaching out for help. It's hard to say that, okay, well, that means like, there's no difference. I think one of the hugest impacts of COVID on the system is the criminal justice system has been at a standstill, literally, for since March. I mean, we have not had misdemeanor, we haven't had felony trials at all, other than in very exceptional circumstances. And misdemeanor trials have just started in the last month or so. And if COVID rate goes up, they can't have jury trials. So my understanding is that for certain types of crimes, there was really an attempt to, plead things out, dismiss charges, just because the criminal justice system, like the Department of Law, knew that they were not going to be able to deal with the backlog. It was going to be insurmountable. There was exceptions for that for domestic violence and sexual assault crimes. But the reality is when you have like a DV crime that's hanging around for a year, like evidence grows stale. These are like people in a human relationship. They reconcile. They decide they can't wait around for a year. They need to have like the bread, the person who's earning money back in the household. So those cases just don't get prosecuted, either because the victim decides, I'm just going to like tell them to dismiss this case, or like another witness is unavailable. And so the criminal justice system just hasn't, I think, been, it hasn't been working effectively just because of COVID. And that's probably meant that there's been a lot of cases that should be prosecuted that probably are not getting prosecuted. It's a terrible time to be either a defendant or a victim in the system because you've been at a standstill for 16 months, essentially. So, that has had a huge, I think, impact on folks. I mean, I just was talking with someone in the last couple of days who had a felony level domestic violence crime committed against them in the fall. And like basically the perpetrator, who was an intimate partner, came back into the household, and just basically kind of convinced that that case shouldn't go to trial, and so that person dismissed the charges, and so that case is not going forward. So no repercussions there. So that's had, I think, a huge impact on victims of crime, of DVNSA crimes. And not that that's the only process, you know, for relief, for accountability, because I think there's other systems. But I think that that is one where we're just not seeing a lot of results because of what's happened with COVID.
Yeah, and I guess a way to, I'm just trying to think of who to sort of talk to about that, or how to kind of look into that. Is that just like looking at what charges have been dismissed? And I mean, that seems like kind of a data reporting opportunity there.
Yeah, I would definitely talk to we have a new prosecutor in town.
Mm-hmm.
Who came from Kenai. And so she has been, you know, in the system in Alaska in one way or another for a while. And she probably will be like, I can't answer these questions, but I'll send you to like someone higher up in the Department of Law.
Okay.
And maybe they can answer some of those questions more.
Okay.
Another place to go, though, is the Office of Victims' Rights.
Okay.
Because I know that they're, you know, they are the agency that is supposed to protect victims' rights in the criminal justice system, completely apart from the, you know, the prosecutor. So they would have some sense of, like, whether, you know, what's happening with victims through this process.
Okay.
But the bottom line is, I mean, it is a terrible time to be a defendant, too, because you have something hanging over your head for this long, right?
Right.
But
right.
In a criminal case, delay always better protects the defendant, because witnesses fall away. You know, evidence becomes stale. You're more likely to have a case be dismissed the longer it is, you know, pending from the time it was initially filed.
That makes sense. Yeah, I, you know, I've been thinking about the backlog, but I haven't really thought through what the ripple effect. I knew there would be ripple effects, but you're kind of spelling it out for me, and this is really helpful. I'll have to reach out to those organizations for sure. Just one second. I'm gonna take a quick note here.
Yeah, I mean, just think about let's say you were sexually assaulted in March of 2020,
mm-hmm.
and the state actually brought charges. That case has just been like hanging around for 16 months now.
Right.
There, it's possible there probably have been maybe some motions filed, some investigation going on,
mm-hmm.
But there's been no even possibility of a jury trial for 16 months, and that just wears a person down. Sexual assault cases are hard enough to prosecute, like to be the victim in, to go through. To have that like hanging around for 16 months without like a clear idea of what's happening, when you might have a jury trial, it's just like a terrible process. And yeah, I don't know, you might think like, this might not be worth it. Maybe I just don't want to do this. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, so these organizations, the Office of Victims' Rights, the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, do they track things by community? Like if I wanted to do like statewide reporting or like Sitka data, like is there any way, because it's so tough in small communities to sort of like report on larger trends, and you know, like we kind of want to move, or I want to move toward that, especially when it comes to like reporting on DV, because we want to be cognizant of like harm done to victims of domestic violence, child abuse, anything, you know, in this arena is so tricky. And traditionally it's sort of been like, this is public record. We report what's, you know, the actions of the courts and what's public record is, you know, for the public to know. But I feel like we're kind of trying to reassess the approach here. But it still needs to be covered. I just feel like a larger trend reporting is the better way to go. But in a small town, that's harder because, you know, who's collecting the data and, you know, is it, So I guess my question is like, what do you think, as far as approaching reporting on trends in Sitka, who should I be reaching out to?
Yeah. So, you know, I assume you've already talked with SAFE to some degree.
A little bit, yeah. And I'm that's
Okay,
that's
'cause
going to be one of my probably my primary sort of resources
yeah.
there.
Because I know that like Martina Kirzner over there was at one point gathering statistics like from the police department and from the prosecutors. Department of Law is always the hardest place to get statistics. That's my experience. They are not always very forthcoming with their data, even though my guess is they must have it. The council should be quite forthcoming with data, and they would have it by community because they get data from SAFE, they get data from, you know, the Shelter and Catch Can, so they should have that by community. I don't know. I would think the police. I mean, the police department here would give you data, and I think that was some of what Martina had.
Okay.
Because we did these what did we call them? Community conversations.
Right.
A couple of years ago, and I mean, I was on that, and one of the officers was on it. We had like OCS there. And I know that Martina had gathered some information from the police about their arrests.
Okay.
But again, that's always just one, like, that's just one snapshot. You have to kind of understand that the data is not like the whole picture.
Right. And what do you think as far as like, I guess capturing that whole picture, what other avenues should I be going down then? You know, I mean, that's what are other, you know, possible, you know, opportunities there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think talking individually to victims of those crimes, to the extent they're willing to have those conversations, like post the incident, what were the obstacles? You know, what were your obstacles in, if you're talking about domestic violence and leaving the relationship, what systems failed you? What could have worked better for you? Because there's lots of DV victims who never want to even be part of a criminal justice system, don't want to call the police. They are concerned that, like, the Office of Children's Services will get involved if they call the police, and then maybe they'll have their kids taken. So it would be good to kind of, I think, hear those perspectives. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is out of the situation or just willing to talk, you can get, I think, some good insight and learning opportunities from that. And I think that combined with the data is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thought. I mean, I'm glad that you are looking at kind of the way you report, because I've had unfairly, like, both the frustration of like, there's not enough reporting on domestic violence, sexual, you know, sexual assault crimes in this community. And then also know that when the paper puts in that, like, oh, this person was arrested for domestic violence, you know, that effectively outs their partner too.
Right.
Especially if you print a name.
Right.
That is very concerning. And I know I've had conversations with SAFE about that. And they're very concerned about that. I think that it's, you know, a good understanding that you have your role and that SAFE has their role. It's a good conversation to have as to what is the most ethical and safest way to report on these crimes and talk about this in a public forum.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely give Martina a call. She's on my list. So I didn't know she'd already been collecting the data, but that totally makes sense. So I'll reach out to her, because I've been like going back through old police blotters and highlighting things, and then like trying to figure out exactly if I want to do a FOIA for like a bunch of documents, or if that's the right route to go, or going to be a, you know, a big resource drain and not necessarily the best snapshot. So if she already has police data, that's definitely like a good tip.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure you know this, but what is it, ProPublica? Is that the name of them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've just been killing it, I thought, with their whole series through the ADN. You know, on both, like, you know, speaking individually with victims, hearing their stories, getting out an understanding of where systems have failed them. I think that their model has been, you know, really, really effective. And so I guess I might encourage you to just go back and kind of look at some of those stories and just, you know, think about what could be learned from those.
Because
I've been super impressed with them.
Yeah, we actually, we're really lucky we just got to partner with them as a network. So we're really excited about that, because they have a lot of resources and have been working with a reporter up in Unalaska, actually. So I'm excited to see what they come out with. She hasn't actually produced anything yet, because it's going to be some big long form expose with ProPublica. So.
Yeah,
that'll be really interesting. But I'll go back and look at those ADN stories. I remember reading some maybe 6 months or so ago that were really, really good. And but I'm not sure if I guess they've had something more. Have they had something more recent? Or I'm trying to think. I remember the big expose about a year ago.
Yeah, and then they actually did a. They had an exhibit at the. Maybe the museum of some of all the profiles they had done, because they had done profiles of sexual assault survivors in the state. You know, a broad spectrum of them, people who had been harmed by priests, you know, people who had been harmed by family members, people who had been just, you know, sexually assaulted by someone they didn't know, and just kind of understanding that whole perspective on why our rates in the state are astronomical. I thought that was really effective.
Yeah, well, I'll take a look at that. And I was gonna also ask, so you've mentioned, you know, a few different organizations I can reach out to. What, and I'll check with SAFE and find out what resources they want to be, you know, to be highlighted for people, because that's, I think, the main angle, hopefully, of my reporting is going to be pretty solutions based, a chance to highlight resources and different things for people to access and make it just more visible. And I don't know if there are any others relating to the courts or law that you think I should look into, or besides, you know, the Council on Domestic Violence and the Office of Victims' Rights, are there any other organizations or, you know, avenues I should go down as far as resources for people?
Yeah. There is Alaska Native statewide tribal coalition. So the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center is a basically coalition based up in Fairbanks, but I think the goal is to be thinking of more community-based solutions, especially when you're thinking of DVSA in small, rural, mostly Alaska Native villages. So they're doing a lot of work on that. They're doing a lot of work on missing, murdered Indigenous women, I know. So that might be something you want to take a look at. And there definitely is more and more tribal, I think, community-based DVSA advocacy and programs that Tlingit and Haida is doing a lot of work on out of Juneau. SPA has some decent funding to be doing that work. So those are, I think, other resources for folks, and you might hear more a little bit more about trends there and what are some, you know, other options that maybe aren't state court or the criminal justice system for folks who are experiencing domestic violence or sexual assault.
Okay. Pardon me. And, you know, you mentioned that you kind of vacillate between this sort of frustration that there isn't enough reporting on, you know, sort of trends within DV, within our community, but also the flip side of that, which is outing victims and you know, too much information that is, you know, makes them easily identifiable in the paper, on the radio. And I guess I wonder, to the first side of that, you know, like in your mind, what would you like to see more of? What would good, like, reporting on domestic violence in Sitka look like? Is it kind of what we've already talked about, you know, talking to victims who are willing to go on the record and looking at data? I mean, what do you see as, like, the holes in our coverage and where we could, you know, like, improve?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I hate to, like, point out problems and not have solutions. I think I would like to think more about that, but I do. I mean, you could talk with, I know there has to be a hook. Like, I know that about journalism, at least, right? Like, in general, what's your hook here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just talking to an agency about this is, you know, going on, this is what they're seeing, these are the problems they're seeing, gets a little boring after a while. I'm not sure about that. I would want to think more about that.
For sure. Yeah. I guess I just kind of, if you don't, you know, mind thinking about that, I'm hoping to talk to you again, you know, once I kind of explore some of these avenues, talk to SAFE fully and like kind of start going down some different pathways with the reporting we're doing. I'd like to touch base with you again and maybe do like an on the record interview. Because this has been super helpful, but I definitely want, you know, perspectives from people who are, you know, boots on the ground and you know, like, in the thick of it. Like, what are we not seeing and what are we kind of missing as a community? What's invisible to the community that we can, you know, shed light on? So, you know, that would be, if you have any ideas, let me know.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, and I think I probably would really like to, you know, sit down with some of the folks at SAFE and maybe just talk with them and perhaps a few others a little bit more about it too, to just explore some thoughts. I feel like groupthink on this kind of thing is always better. And I know Natalie specifically, Natalie's ED at SAFE, had some of the concerns about names that I think she talked to Rob about, but she's been out for a while. So she's someone who I would definitely want to bring into the conversation when she's back.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you think I need to take down in my notes that I need to look into, or anything I didn't ask about?
Not that I can think of. I really appreciate you, like, you know, trying to hit this story and you know, talk more about it. And I would really like to think more about it. So stay on me.
Yeah, will do. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Well, this has been really helpful, and I'm just gonna chip away at this list. And I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of walk me through it and help me get started. It's awesome. So I'll definitely be giving you a call soon once I get a little bit more info and can kind of start moving forward on some stories.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Christine. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Catherine.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.